middle of the Amud on Hey Amud Aleph. We're talking about 2 days of Rosh Hashanah today. So Alan provided me the page from Minhagei Yisrael for me to look at. I looked at it quickly, but I need to track down the sources that he has.
It's Minhagei Eretz Yisrael.
Minhagei Eretz Yisrael, correct.
Right.
Okay. So I'll need
Spurber.
To...
What? It's not Spurber. It's by somebody that's been hugging Eretz Yisrael, and it's basically, I forget his name, Bliss or something like that.
Okay. And I want to look at what he's referencing in his footnotes and then see. But yes, it does make the claim that at some point there are Jews living in Israel who are doing one day Rosh Hashanah, and they're not living in the Beis Din. It's post that in any case. All right. God willing, I will report on that when I get to look through it seriously. But we are in the middle of the Yomid, middle of the page, on Hey Amud Aleph, and the Gemara had asked the question of, so what happens nowadays post Beis Hamikdash? Because in the days of Beis Hamikdash, they had said, we're not going to accept the Eidim, we're not going to accept the witnesses all day long. Because of whatever it was that went wrong, that we spent time discussing with the carbon, with the song, whatever it was. And then post Beis HaMikdash, where the concern is gone, so Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, and let's accept the Eidim all day long. And therefore, the only reason to keep the second day, for anybody outside, is going to be the doubtful day concern. They didn't get the message in time, in which case we'll view it like any Yom Tov Sheni. And we'll say that the meaning like Yom Tov Sheni Shagolios that we have the second day outside of Israel, and we'll say egg laid on the first day. So I mean, Mutter on the second day.
But if that's the case, if it's like a regular Yom Tov, then it wouldn't be Kiddush Shabbos.
Then that's correct. It's not Kiddush Shabbos. That's correct. He's saying post Beis HaMikdash, it is no longer Kiddush Shabbos. That's the statement. Then we have the issue, what about Rav and Shmuel? Fine. But along comes Rabbi Yosef, and Rabbi Yosef disagrees, and that's what we were up to. Middle of the line, halfway down. Rabbi Yosef, Amar af mi takanas Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai ve'elet beitza asura. Rabbi Yosef says that even after Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, we're going to go back to accepting witnesses all day long, egg remains asur on day two. The egg that was laid on day one is asur on day two. My time, why? Have a davar shebeminyan, v'chol davar shebeminyan tzarech minyan acher lahatiro. This is something that was prohibited by a minyan. Minyan meaning a count that the chachamim got together and they voted and they decided that we are going to make the 2 days into a single kedusha. Back in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, they said we're making it into one long kedusha, and that davar shebeminyan, that which has been voted on that way in the times of the Beis Hamikdash, can't be changed, not without another vote of the chachamim. That's what you would require in order to overturn it. And we didn't have any such thing. If you take a look at Rashi, tzarech minyan acher, he says, Sheyimnu lecha v'yatiruhu, they're going to have to take another vote and permit it. Ulekaman parchinon, beza mi'itzara b'minyan, later on, the Gemara is going to ask, well, you know, the egg wasn't voted on to aser, to prohibit the egg in the first place. It wasn't about the egg. It was about accepting witnesses. V'halolo nimnu el ha-kabalas edus. The vote was to stop accepting witnesses at Mincha. U'ba'ucha zebor Rabbi Yochanan v'itiro. And that was what Rabbi Yochanan went back on. So that the Gemara is going to have to talk about. But the basic principle is, right now we are assuming the egg became aser via a vote by the Chachamim. And in order for it to become permitted, you need a vote by the Chachamim. It is not enough for the laws of witness acceptance to change.
Okay, what do the Chachamim vote on here? The Chachamim vote on having the gzera of not having the witnesses coming after a certain time. Did the Chachamim vote, as you just sort of said 2 seconds ago, that it's one Kedusha, or is that interconnected with the other? And then what is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai? Forget about the egg for a second.
Yeah.
He was Mevatel the Gzera.
Right, so that's what the Gemara's going to... All of this is what the Gemara's going to have to ask on Hey Amud Beis.
Right.
That's what they're going to want to know, is what Rashi predicted and what you're talking about now. This question of, well, the vote initially wasn't about eggs, the decree wasn't about eggs, it was about witnesses. But what it sounds like we're saying right now, although we are going to challenge it later, is that the egg itself the rule that this is one Kedusha, and therefore something that was usher to you on day one is usher to you on day two, that idea is what they voted on initially and what and would require a vote to repeal. That's the suggestion right now. Again, we have to come back to it on the base, but that's what they're suggesting.
So Yochum and Zakkai didn't have a base then?
Yeah, it says base then, no? It says base then, right? Can we just say that?
Well, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was the one who permitted accepting the Eidim. That's correct. We're going to have to see what he did. I mean, all this we have to deal with. But what I wanted to do first was to spend a minute talking about this idea that a gezerah that's created by a group requires a new vote. I want to talk a little bit about that because the Gemara is going to talk about where it comes from. So I wanted to frame this a little bit. Try to think about the best order to use for this. I think we'll go into the Gemara first, where it presents the idea where this comes from, and then we're going to see the comments on it. So Amar Rabbi Yosef, Mina'am min Allah. Rabbi Yosef said, "Where did I get this idea anyway? That there's a requirement for a new vote?" And Rashi sharpens the question. If you see Rashi, Mina'am min Allah. He says, "Mina'am min Allah." That anything prohibited by vote requires another vote to permit. Even if you were to enter a circumstance in which it made sense to permit, and to say, well, the original decree shouldn't apply in this case, nonetheless, it will be aser until there's a gathering of the Chachamim again to permit. In other words, a circumstance comes up and you say, come on, they didn't have this in mind. It doesn't make sense to prohibit it under this. To take a latter-day discussion, latter-day, it's already around in Tosfos' day, but the clapping on Shabbos discussion, right? So they make a gezeira and say, no clapping to the rhythm because you might come to play with a musical instrument. And Tosfos says, we don't make musical instruments. We don't make instruments anymore. So what Rashi says, the Gemara seems to be saying, is even if you enter into a circumstance in which you say, well, the original gezera doesn't make sense in this case, nonetheless, tzarech minyan acher lahatiro, you will require a new vote, and until then, no clapping. That's what Rashi frames what Rabbi Yosef is asking here. How do I know that that is true? And he says, "Dichsim," as the pasuk says, "Lech amur lahem, shuvu lachem le'ohal lechem." This is talking about what happens at Sinai. We know that the Jews are told, "Al tikshu elisha," don't go to your spouse. The men and the women are separated 3 days before the Torah is given. After the Torah has been given, after the big sound and light show with the Aseret Hadibros, anyway, after that, Moshe is told to go tell the Jews, go back to your tents, meaning go back to each other. So from the fact that Hashem has to say, go back, that shows that a gezerah does not simply vanish, even though logically the reason for it is gone, because they've accepted the Torah now, they're done talking to God. Nonetheless, you require God to explicitly state, I am revoking the original rule, go back to your tents together. That's our first source.
So it wasn't clear when the original Zer was brought down, that Shem struck and say for the next 3 days.
Right. So that we have to talk about in Tosfos. It's a good question. Hold on to the question. The Omer, and you have another Pasuk, also regarding what happens at Har Sinai. Another rule they were given in the lead up to Matan Torah was, don't go on the mountain. Right? And Moshe is told, be careful, guard the mountain, and so on. And then afterwards, it says, "Bimshocha yovel," when the shofar blows, yovel meaning the shofar, when the shofar blows, "Hema yalu bahar," then they will be able to ascend the mountain. Which again is an explicit reversal of the earlier decree of don't go on a mountain, and it's needed because otherwise the original gezerah would still apply. That's the second pasuk he brings. And then we have a third source. We have Vitanya in our version of it, but it should be Utnan. It's a Mishnah in Meister Sheni. And it's talking about the laws of what is known as Kerem Revai. So I brought you a little bit of background on Kerem Revai on the sheets, because generally speaking, people don't know anything about Kerem Revai. If you jump down to source Vav, we're going to come back to Aleph through Hale. But if you take a look at source Vav, just a little bit of background on this, that'll make it clearer. Pesukim from Parshas Kedoshim. V'chisavalo el ha'aretz intatem kol eitz ma'achal. When you come into the land and you plant fruit trees, va'araltem or lo sawes piryo, shalosh nimi elachem areilim lo ye'achel. For the first 3 years, you render the fruit arla. It is off limits, you're not allowed to benefit from it. Uvashanahar v'yis, pasuk chavdalit, in the fourth year, yiyye kol piryo kodesh hilulim lashem. Then all of the produce will be sacred to Hashem. And then in the fifth year, the fifth year you get to eat the produce. So what's the status of the fourth year produce? It says that it is holy to God. But it's only the first 3 years that you're not allowed to eat it. So what's going on with my fourth year produce? So this is what we call Revai. Revai from Arba, four. And the Rambam writes in Sor Zion, Neta Revai Harehu Kodesh. The fourth year's growth is sacred. Shenemar, the pasuk says, "Uvashana arvi is yek kol piryo kodesh hilulim Hashem." The pasuk we just quoted. V'dino le'achel b'Yerushalayim le'baylov k'maiser sheni. The rule is that the owners eat it in Yerushalayim, just like maiser sheni, which you're supposed to bring to Yerushalayim. So too, neta revai, your fourth year of fruit is supposed to go to Yerushalayim. Lest somebody say, "I've never seen anybody do that with their fourth year fruit." That everybody eats the fourth year fruit that they have on their apple tree or whatever it is. So take a look at Source Ches, the Sefer HaChinuch, just a quick digest of the rules. He says, V'noheges mitzvah zu bizman habayis, ba'aretz bizcharim unikevos. He says, this mitzvah applies only in Israel and during the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Avolo b'chutz la'aretz, but it's never going to apply outside of Israel. He says some of our masters have indeed ruled that Netzer Revai will apply in Israel even today. And regarding grapes, it would apply outside of Israel as well, rabbinically. And according to this, Tzarech kol adam achshav lift those peros kerem revai shelo al shvei pruto yoser. One would then be obligated to redeem his produce. Right, just like we do for Maaser Sheni, if we have Israeli produce, so now that's what you're going to have to do with your Netzer Revai and your Kerem Revai outside of Israel. Gam Amru Shemavarchen Al HaPidya, they even say you make a bracha on it. V'yachar kach mashlech HaPidyon Liyam HaMelech, and then you throw out the money into the Dead Sea where no one's going to use it, Kolamar L'makom HaAved, meaning to a place where it'll be destroyed. Kedei Shalo Yeh Nebo Brias, that no one will benefit. Lefishu Kadosh Hayom Midrabanan V'yachar kach Ochel Peros Karmo, because it is holy, therefore you have to do it this way, and then you'll be able to eat from the vineyard. Aval Neta Revai Enu Noe Kla B'chutza La'aretz Afilu Midrabanan. But everybody agrees Neta Revai does not apply outside of Israel. So that's why we're able to eat the fourth year stuff. This is not our mitzvah. It's a mitzvah in Israel. Got it? It is our mitzvah, but we're in the wrong place to fulfill it. Okay. So now, see the Gemara. And our third source regarding takanos, or gezeros. 7 lines up from the bottom. Kerem Revai haya ola l'Yerushalayim mahalach yom echad l'chol tzad. Kerem Revai was brought to Israel from a day's travel on every side. Meaning, you weren't allowed to redeem it. Even though technically the rule is that I could redeem my produce and bring the money to Yerushalayim and spend it on food, just like I do with Maaser Sheni, within 1 day of Israel, they didn't allow you to do that. Well, Yerushalayim, I'm sorry, you wouldn't be allowed to do it. Within 1 day's travel, you had to bring it to Yerushalayim. V'zoi Truma, and this is the boundary that marks the 1 day's travel. Eilat min hadarom is the proper addition. This is not Eilat that we are familiar with way south. You're not making it there in a day in their day. They have Akravas min hatzafon, Lod min hamarav, V'yardein min hamizrach. Right, those are your boundaries. Eilat in the south, Akravas in the north, Lod in the west, and the Jordan River in the east. V'amar ula v'item rabba barbrachana omra b'yochanan matam. What is the reason, Ula asks, cited, or some say it was rabba barbrachana citing with b'yochanan. What is the reason why you couldn't redeem the produce? Because they wanted to decorate the markets of Yerushalayim with produce. Meaning, if everyone just brings the money, so where's the fruit going to come from? Yerushalayim, on a mountaintop, you know, it's not as though they have fresh fruit. They can have fresh fruit, but they're not going to have it in the way you're going to get it. These people who are growing on their farms. So they want people to actually bring in produce. Vitanya, and the Brisa says, on this, here's where we get to the point, Karam Ravai Hayalol Rabbi Eliezer B'Mizrach Lod B'Tzad Kfar Tavi. Rabbi Eliezer had Karam Ravai that he was supposed to bring to Yerushalayim from his vineyard, which was east of Lod, right next to Kfar Tavi. So east of Lod means that it is within the one day boundary. Ubikesh Lakiro La'aniyim, and he didn't want to bring it to Yerushalayim. Rashi says it was just too much of a burden. So he wanted to say, listen, I'm going to render it hefker, and any needy person who wants it, say you take it. That was his idea.
No, I'm not sure of that.
Nope. Because he's rendering it hefker.
Hefker for them to take it to Yerushalayim.
So that's what we have to talk about. I don't know if we'll get there today, but we have to ask, what kind of favor is he doing for them? Are they now going to have to drag the stuff to Yerushalayim in order to eat it? Is he really doing them any favors? We have to talk about that. But that's what he wanted to do. Amru lo talmidav, and his students said to him, Rabbi, our master, kvar nimnu alecha chaviracha vihitiruhu. What's the big deal? Your colleagues all got together. They got rid of that rule that you have to do it. That you have to bring this to Yerushalayim. They ended this. What's going on that they ended it? So Rashi explains that this was post Beis Hamikdash. This is after the second Beis Hamikdash is over. And the only reason to bring it to Yerushalayim is within the view that the initial Kedusha of Yerushalayim persists even without a Beis Hamikdash, and you have to bring it there. But at this point, with the Beit HaMikdash destroyed, they figure, what's the point of trying to beautify Yerushalayim? Enough that people have this mitzvah to do. Let them bring their money to Yerushalayim. They don't have to bring the produce. So they got rid of the
gezeirah. But originally, according to the rice, so you didn't have to bring it in, or was that...
You could bring cash.
You could bring cash. But they made gezeirah that you had to bring the peiros. And then they said, So from Rabbanon to Rabbanon, they basically made gezeirah.
Exactly.
And then gezeirah.
Exactly, they undid the gzera. So the Gemara says, "Man chaverecha, who are the colleagues of Rabbi Eliezer we're talking about? Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. That's who it was. So he says, "Taima dinimnu." The reason why the gzera was gone is because they actually did the vote. Halo nimnu lo. Had they not voted, the gzera would still be in force. Okay, we're going to pause there. The Gemara next is going to have to ask why I needed three different sources. Two different psukim from Har Sinai, plus this Mishnah regarding Karam Ravai. So we're going to have to come back to that.
The last source.
Yes.
Without reading the last lines of Tama the Nimu, couldn't that actually be a source saying that he was able to annul a decree without having a greater Beit Din?
Why?
Well, okay. Who's saying Tama Dinimnu? Is this how we're learning that?
That's how we're learning the source.
That's where we're going.
That's how we explain the Mishnah. But even without that, all that we have in the initial Mishnah is there was a Gzeira, and then there was a vote to cancel the Gzeira.
Karnimnu
alecha
chaverecha
v'itziru.
The Sanhedrin was in Yavna. So, are we...
Well, maybe Yavna or Tanusha, I'm not sure where it is at this particular
time. So we're assuming that Yochanan ben Zakkai was...
So we have to talk about that. It's okay. A good question. But right now, what we're saying is that we have these three sources to show that a gzera requires cancellation by someone. Gzera does not simply disappear.
There's no time limit on the gzera.
Correct. And this is all meant to support Rabbi Yosef, who says that therefore the egg remains prohibited. Once Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai made his rule, granted, his rule wasn't about eggs or whatever. His rule was about Edim, that we have to still deal with. But that's going to apply until somebody comes along to actually cancel the original Gezerah, and no one has done that. That's Rabbi Yossi's position.
So when you quoted that choice was about clapping your hands, right? But we're not... It's not an issue anymore, right?
According to Tosfos.
It isn't. So there are hundreds
of... So that's what we have to get to.
Okay,
thanks. That's what we have to get to. Okay. So, first of all, take a look at Tosfos Kol, the bottom Tosfos on Hayamad Aleph. He tries to discuss this in the context of a phenomenon of his day, which I suppose it's not just of his day, but he's describing it, of time-bound decrees. They would make a decree, he calls it a cheret, and And they would say, this decree is lasting until Pesach. The question is, where the initial decree explicitly says, this is until Pesach, then does someone have to sit down at Pesach time and say, we are now nullifying the decree? Or do we say there was a time limit built in? And from the fact that we use Har Sinai as our example, where the Pasuk actually says, Heyu nechonim l'shloshes yamim al tikshu elisha, and yet you need to cancel it, so that means that putting in a time limit doesn't help you. That's what he starts with, but then he's going to discuss it. But that's his starting point. He says, Kol davar sh'minyan, tzarech minyan acher l'hatziro. Yesha hayu rotzim lomar, mikan, da'osan charamos sha'osan lizman ad Pesach, l'zman acher. There were those who wanted to say that these charamos, decrees of some kind, that they declare and say will last until Pesach or whatever time, that even when the time comes, you need a new minion to cancel them. Hashem prohibited the spouses to each other for the sake of giving the Torah to them. It should have been over once Matan Torah happened, and yet Hashem had to actually make an explicit statement. So Tosfos says that's what some want to say, but he says Velohi. He says it's not so. Tahacha ein kan shum zman. There was no deadline. Sinai. Correct. At Sinai there was no deadline. Why? The pasuk that says, be ready for 3 days, only meant to say, prepare for an event that is going to happen in 3 days. That's what it's saying. It's not saying, and the gezeirah is only for 3 days. Prepare for an event which is coming in 3 days.
But then it's not a source.
Sorry?
Then it's not a source for a Gemara.
Oh, sure it is. It's just a source for a Gemara without talking about time limit, explicit time limits. It's a source regarding Gezeiras that don't have time limits.
But it means when God made the Gezeirah, there was no expiry time on it.
Right.
So God had to say...
Exactly. Exactly. And then Tosfos goes on to say, this is the difference between saying, Hayu nechonim shloshes yamim, which would mean separate for 3 days, and Hayu Nechonim Lishloshes Yamim, for an event that's happening in 3 days. And he says that's the difference. Okay. As opposed to where you do have a set time, that's going to be a different story. To which Tosfos in Sanhedrin asks a question. If you take a look on your sheets, it starts off. He goes the other way. He says, V'chi tema, you might ask, if you're talking about a gezerah that was made stam without any time limit specification, then of course you need somebody to come along and vote to cancel it. Right? If it doesn't have an expiration date, then it goes until someone says no. So he says, Itzrich. No, you do need to say that. You needed to prove that in the Gemara. Why? Salka daita chamina, I would have thought to say, kevan debatel davar shenesar avuro, memela huter, I would say that once the reason for which this was created is gone, then the decree disappears. Like in fact Tosfos does with the clapping. Like in the case of Har Sinai, where we all know it's in order to receive the Torah. So therefore, even if there is no time limit stated, nonetheless, it would have been logical to say, once the Torah is given, they're permitted to each other. What we're saying is, no, we need an official permission. Or like the case in our Gemara about the Kerem Ravai, that they would bring the produce a day's travel to Yerushalayim. You needed to actively permit it, even though the Beis HaMikdash was destroyed. So Tosfos in Sanhedrin says that the reason why you needed to say this is because what we're learning is, even where the reason is gone, bitul is going to be required. You're going to need a vote to get rid of the gezeira, which doesn't look good for clapping yet, but hang in there. That's the way that Tosus in Sanhedrin addresses this. And this comes up in all sorts of cases. I brought you one in Source Beis. The Magen Avraham talks about the issue of malacha on Erev Pesach after Chatzos, after midday. So he says, in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, we had a rule, no malacha after midday, because you need to make sure people are going to do the Korban Pesach. That's their Yom Tov, whatever the reason, you have to be involved in your Korban Pesach, no malacha. So the Magen Avraham writes, Ve'afagav dehashto leka Pesach, granted that today we don't have a Korban Pesach. Mikomakom havi davar shebiminyan, this is something that was decreed by vote, shehaya aser b'chol mekomos, it was also everywhere. V'tzarech minyan acher lahatiro, and you need a new vote to get rid of it. But then he says something else you need to notice. Masha'ein kein begiloi. Those who have been at the Avodah Zarah Shir, or were there when we did the Gilui discussions, remember this, that not just water, wine, other liquids, whatever, that have been left exposed are also because of the nasty creatures that are going to get in there and spit their venom in. We discussed the difference between the biters and the spitters and so on. So the statement here is, Gilui is different. Why? Because that was never decreed for everywhere. It was only decreed for places where there are snakes.
So if there's no Korban Pesach, it wasn't decreed for there?
So he's saying the Korban Pesach Gezerah was a Gezerah everywhere. No one may do Malacha. The snake one was only for snakes. Now, the big question which Howie's going to ask me is, so where do we have the text of these gezeros that we can look at and determine which ones were made for everywhere and which ones were made for unique locations? And the answer is, it seems like, from all the cases that I look at, we do this retroactively. Meaning that we look at it and say, well, they repealed this one. Oh, I guess that means that it was for a limited place. Or they didn't repeal it, but they know people don't observe this anymore. It must have been that was for a limited place. No, it's not circular, it's tautological.
Right.
It's not circular, but it's a tautology.
Right.
Yes, you will never be wrong if you do it this way. That's true. And that's not really a good way to do things. But I haven't seen anywhere an archive of gezeros that's going to tell me which ones are for unique locations and which ones are for everywhere as an across the board rule.
If we had tighter drafting of gezeiros, we wouldn't have a lot of the gezeiros today.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we didn't have enough lawyers.
Well, you say even if the original
word processing.
You go as far as saying even if the original reason that we happen to know what that reason was is no longer applicable.
Doesn't matter.
Right.
That's what he's telling you. So just to talk a little bit about how you would undo a gezeira. How exactly this works. And this is going to go to the question of Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai and what he did as part of this. Take a look at Source Gimel, the Rambam.
Yeah, because I think in what Tosfos says, so, we had a gezeira, that we give the Korach HaDorban at any time to undo their own gezeira, right?
Do we?
No, I'm asking, you know.
So take a look.
Okay. No, I'm just saying, if let's say, the Toronto Rabbinical...
The answer is no. The answer is no.
No.
No. When we say Yiftach Bedoro, Kishmuel Bedoro,
right,
that's in terms of handling cases that come to him.
Right.
Then you go to the judge, Asher Yeh Bayim Emahim.
Right.
But not in terms of canceling zeros. There you have to be greater than
right.
The earlier one, which is what creates all the trouble. Take a look.
But if the Toronto Rabbana make a zero, they're the only ones who I have to follow that zero. That's how they decide. Every rabbi
has to be accepted by the community.
Right.
I mean, that's
that's another thing, right?
But there's also the question of who is the intended audience.
Right.
Is it intended as a local thing, or is it intended as a global thing, and then that will determine who has to accept it in order for it to be binding.
Right. So the thing with the Nechashi makes sense, because the people that don't have snakes wouldn't have accepted that custom.
Okay.
But when you're in a new, we're now in Canada, where, let's say, the clapping or some other issue. So if the gezeira was never here, and it was never accepted by the community that is here, does that mean the gezeira does not exist?
Well, the problem is that you are a descendant of Jews who did not live here, but lived somewhere else where they had this gezeira. So it's not geographic. Minhag, you can claim, is more geographic than gezeira. I think there's more to say there about it, depending on whether it's a new community or an existing community. But take a look at Gimel, where the Rambam gives us the formula for how lifting a gzera would work. Based in shegazru gzera o tiknu takana, if based in made a decree or an enactment, generally speaking, although not universally, gzera is a negative and takana is a positive, to do something. Vin higu minhag, they enforce some kind of a practice that everybody should do. Upashan adavar b'chol Yisrael, and it's spread everywhere. And then up steps another basin, and they want to get rid of it. They cannot unless they are greater than the original in wisdom and number. If they're greater in wisdom but not in number, or b'minyan of a lo b'chachma, in number but not in wisdom, eino yochel batel es devara, then they're out of luck. Afilu batel hatam, even if the reason for the original gzera is gone, that doesn't matter. Hatam shebiglalo gazu rishonim, o iskinu. Eino achronim yochon levatel ad shegdola mehem, they have to be greater. To which he then asks, how can you be greater in number? V'heyach yu gdola mehem b'minyan, ho v'chol beistin u beistin shel shivim b'yachadu. Right, we're assuming you're talking Sanhedrin class, okay? That they're making a gezera for all of Israel. So there only are 71. You can't become greater. If you add more judges, you have a problem. So he says, "Zet minyan chachmei hador sheskimu v'kibu hadavar sha'amru based in hagadol v'lo chilku bo." Good luck. He says it is the number of the chachamim of the generation who went along with this. They did not disagree. So you have to outnumber the adherence of the original based in with your adherence.
That's for which we have no counts.
Sorry?
For which we have no counts.
Yeah.
Is there another issue as well? He was assuming based in Zonka.
Smuchen up, right. Well, all of it. You can't make a gzera without having smicha. Otherwise, it's not a gzera.
But to the nowadays, there's a big issue in terms of whether there's based in smicha.
Well, there isn't the based in smicha. And that was easy.
So you can never. You can never get
it. So it would appear.
But it says a kilopatl b'chacham. How do we...
Right, that was like what Toso said. Yeah. That even if the reason is gone, you still need... Correct. That's correct. So he's saying... Yeah.
So have we got the clapping thing again?
So we haven't solved the clapping problem yet. Yeah. Although we sort of... We did provide the answer in the Magen Avraham.
You found another way to do it.
We already provided the answer in the Magen Avraham, but we'll come back to it. So hang in there. But first, I wanted to show you this Kesef Mishnah. First, the Ravid. I'm sorry, we're still in Gimel. The Ravid has an argument with this position of the Rambam. Hasagas Ravid. Amar Avram, Itur Shuke Yerushalayim Beperos Kashya Ale. He says, I don't understand what the Rambam is talking about when he says the new Beis Din has to be greater than the previous one. What's he going to do with this issue of the Revi that he brought to Yerushalayim? Sharishonim Tiknuhu. That was created by early authorities in the time of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai Bila Achar Churban. And Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai comes along and he cancels it. Imnation is Batel HaTa'am L'Rishonim, because the reason they had originally is gone, because there's no Beis HaMikdash. V'loya Gadol K'Rishonim. But who's Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai to do that? He's not as great as the ones who preceded him. How did he do that? So the Ravid argues you do not need to be greater than the originals. From the fact that Yochanan ben Zakkai can cancel that gezerah, you see that you don't have to be as great, you just have to have a good argument. That's the way that the Ravid looks at it. To which the Kesef Mishnah says no. The Kesef Mishnah is in the source Dalad. The Kesef Mishnah's answer is Umikomakum Kushyas Haravid Eini Makir. He says, I don't recognize this question of the Ravid. Dimi Omar Lo Shav Yochanan ben Zakkai Lo Haya Gadol K'Rishonim. Who told him that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai wasn't as great as those who preceded him? Who are you going to tell me Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai isn't as great? V'im Tomer, and he might say, V'damrin Meperek Yishnochlin, the Gemara in Baba Basra, V'chein B'sukha. Where they say, "Hey Talmidim, Hayu Lehilel, Lehilel." Sorry, that Hillel had 80 students. You remember this? Gadol Shebekulan is Yonas and Ben Uziel. He's the greatest. Katan Shebekulan is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. The smallest is Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. So that's your proof that he's not greater than the previous generations. He's the smallest of Hillel's Tamidim. But Dilma Katan Shebekulam lo b'chachmas haTorah ka'amar ela b'shar chachmos hu shayu gadol mimenu. He says maybe he's not lesser in Torah knowledge. He's lesser in other areas. What do you mean? Teda, you know this. Daka Amar Hasam, because it says there in the discussion in the Gemara when they talk about the Talmidim, it talks about what made one so great. So it says Shlomhiniach Mimishalos Kosim Mishlos Shualim Sichas Shadim Sichas Malachay Ashari Sumaisim Merkava. He talks about how he knew all the different types of parables and wisdoms and talk of the Shadim and the Malachim and all that. So maybe they were greater than him in those areas. But not in Torah knowledge. Maybe in Torah knowledge he was greater. He says, I'll prove it. He takes over for Hillel. He may be the smallest of Hillel's Talmidim, but guess what? He's the one they all have to call rabbi next. If he's the worst, then why is he the head? The extra gadol mehem haya, rather he is as great or greater than they are. The and further, even if you'll say that in Torah wisdom too he was the smallest. Being the smallest of Hillel's Talmidim doesn't mean he's smaller than the people who made the Takana. And don't ask, well, wait a minute, that's a foul, right? You can't say that the later ones are greater than the earlier ones. He says, don't tell me that that can't happen, you know, Niskatnu Hadaros and so on, because the Gemara in Tanis has Rabba as greater than Rabbi Yehuda who preceded him. That he was able to learn an extra set of halachos and many more halachos in Tumah v'Tahara than those who preceded him. So the point is that we have precedent for the idea that the later one can be greater than the earlier one. Don't write off that possibility.
He didn't tackle the part of Minyan here.
No, he didn't tackle Minyan at all. He assumed that's fine, that he has Minyan. But the point that emerges from this is, you know, sort of a positive point and a negative point. On the one hand, he has now told us that someone in a later generation can qualify as being greater than someone in an earlier generation, which is, I think, a novelty. On the other hand, in doing so, he has sustained the rule that in order to get rid of Xera, you have to be greater than the earlier one. The Reitman's point was to say you don't have to be, but now he has defended that perspective. So that's the way he'll say that this works. There's more to say on this than this code. It's sure, there's a lot to say with it. But I wanted to get to one more point within this, which is there are cases where no bittul is needed. And the primary example is where we say, as the Magen Avraham said, that the gzera was never intended to be an overarching for everywhere type of a gzera. It was only meant to apply where the condition applies. So the Magen Avraham said it in terms of Gilui. He said, if there are no snakes, the Gzera was always, if you live where there are snakes, exposed liquids are Osir.
Is he reading that in, or is...
Well, that's what we don't know. We don't have the original text.
Okay, so you're back to...
Yeah, so take a look at Source Hay, which is where Tosfos says it. The Magen Avraham didn't invent this in the 16th century, in the 17th century. Tosfos said it. He says, V'anu she'en nachashim mitzuyin beinenu, e'machush mishum Gilui. No snakes here, says Tosfos. I live in England or France or Germany in a very cold period in Europe. We don't have snakes. There's no concern for Gilui. Don't tell me we need now a new vote and so on. And the whole Gezerah was only where such things exist and where there are snakes. And we discussed this in the Avodah Zarah Shir. We discussed it more when the Gilui topic came up, but that's also going to be the answer regarding the musical instruments. The Gezerah was not no clapping anywhere. The Gezerah was in a community where this is what they do, where they fix their instruments. That's where this is going to be an issue. by the way, not everybody agrees with this philosophy.
Right, it's a little doichik when I remember learning the Gemara and stuff.
Yeah, and the Aruch HaShulchan is very, very against this. The Aruch HaShulchan says this is entirely wrong. The
dancing also, right?
Like what Tezer says, you mean?
The whole concept of this, that this gezer was limited to only particular places. Fast. Yeah, he's also against it because logically he says, of course we fix instruments. You never tuned a guitar? I mean, it's not like it's a hard thing to do.
You said they don't combine music and clapping or any other kind of movement the way they did in the Beis Hamikdash basically during those times.
What do you mean?
In other words, there was a rhythmic approach to singing and music, clapping and whatever, you know, running around or shaking, whatever, so that they combine the two of them. They knew how to combine.
But we still do.
Well, he says we don't.
He said, okay.
He said we don't know.
I don't know how they did it in Novartok, you know, 100 years ago. But they know what we do now.
We don't know how.
Come Friday night to our show. There's a real rhythm there.
But he says we don't know how to use musical instruments. We don't know how to use the musical instruments in conjunction with.
We just stop with the Carl Bach. That's all I ask. Just stop with the Carl Bach.
That's what it said. That's basically, I think.
Any other tune?
I don't know.
Yeah.
But Rashi also says you can't dance either.
Yeah. Well, then what we do is shuffling. It's not dance. It's not dancing. It's shuffling.
The only thoughts of Xeris and Avodah Zarah that they get around, you know, you can't deal with the Goy 3 days before, 3 days after their Yontif, and Goyim has Sunday, which means you can't deal with Goyim at all. And we work out how to get around Xeris.
Right. Howie, those were money.
So I'm saying, I mean,
no, but there again,
with Brush, you gave the type of the wine, the Yainesef, that even though you're not supposed to have Hana'a.
But that's a much clearer case. Because there, what they tell you is, you can't deal with an Oved Avodah Zarah. And their answer is, this person isn't an Oved Avodah Zarah. It's actually built into the Xera. The wording there works a lot better. In other words, the Gilui cases often don't even mention snakes. They just say, don't drink this, it's been left out. There it says, don't deal with an Oved Avodah Zarah. And my answer is, he's not an Oved Avodah Zarah. That's their answer. He's not from. He's not going to thank his God about his business deal with me. That's their answer in the Gemara.
The padakum in the field and things like that.
Sorry?
The padakum that you could eat in the field and different things.
Right, so we had that whole discussion about why padakum may be considered different. It was something that they didn't accept, or it was considered too hard for the tzibur. But
it's also coming after the fact, the same way that you're saying whether...
But it's not. You know, they have the debate then.
Right.
It's not us coming in afterwards. In the Gemara itself, they're having the debate. Can you permit this or not?
Right. Where they're saying, within the Gemara's time frame, they're saying a later generation did not really accept it.
No, but correct. They're having the conversation.
Right.
Yeah. That's true. They're debating how is this? Is it repealable? Is it not repealable? We had the same discussion regarding the oil. And the question of Rabbi Yehuda Nissiya and his reason.
I'm blowing shofar on Shabbos.
Well, there no one repeals it.
No longer what?
No one repeals that gzera.
Well, they tried.
The shofar?
Yeah.
What are you talking about?
Lichtenstein.
Did he?
Yeah, he tried. He tried to get together based in Sfat that would basically...
Who was this?
Lichtenstein. He was a Talmud of the Chassam Sefer.
Okay, that's news to me. I didn't know this.
Yeah, somebody blew like a shot.
Look at Rabbi Zevin's
okay.
Book,
yeah. He's right. There's a number of people who tried.
I have no problem with it. I have no problem.
In fact, he blew it, but nobody else accepted his thing. No. But there's a Rishon, I think, called Shilte Gibori.
Sure.
Who holds that you could hire a goy to play music for you on Shabbos.
Oh, no, that's not a chiddush. They used to do it.
The Ramah.
That's the Ramah with the wedding and the whole bit. Yeah, no, that they did.
Yeah,
absolutely.
The Ramah was against that.
No, but the discussion is there. But to sum up what we accomplished here, we were talking about Rosh Hashanah and the 2 days of Rosh Hashanah today, and the upshot of everything is that Rav Yosef says that the egg is usur until someone comes along and actively permits it, because And he brings you three sources, two psukim from Har Sinai, one about the husbands and wives, and the other one about going up on the mountain, and the source from Karavai. One thing that we're still going to need to do is discuss what it was that Rabbi Eliezer was trying to do for the Aniyim in this case. How was he making anything better for them? Are they going to have to bring it to Yerushalayim? And then the other is going to be what exactly it was that Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai permitted. Was it the egg or was it the Edim? And that question is something we still have to deal with. So, God willing, next week.